Welcome everyone to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell. Joining me today,
Kendall Sullivan once again.
Kendall is back. Kendall, so a little movie came out. You might have heard of the franchise before. Spider-Man.
Okay, Spider-Man. Gotcha. Yeah, I was not in the loop about this one. Okay.
No? Interesting. No, okay, fair enough. Before we get to the box office, we have some current events to talk about. We have some James Cameron news. Of course, if it's Grayson on the episode, there's going to be something about James Cameron somewhere.
Gotta be.
We get a little bit of Scorsese, and we talk Disney and Star Wars a little bit, and then lots of lists to compare all these Marvel movies. Without further ado, jumping right into it. Kendall, how was your weekend so far?
It was all right.
You having fun?
It was a late on Saturday morning. But then I slept in yesterday.
Oh, so you were the late PA last week, and they didn't call us 4 p.m. on Friday. Mm-hmm. What time did they finally get done?
I was out of the door at 6 a.m. the next
Jeez.
Day. Yeah, it was, man. It was not fun.
Were you supposed to come in at 4? Or
I came in at 6.
Oh, at 6. Where were you supposed to come in? At 6?
6.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That was a long shift for you, man.
It worked out. I mean, I got some writing done. I got to sleep in the next day, so it was all fine.
How quiet is the... At what point in the office is, like, it just gets so quiet that, like, you can just do whatever you want?
That's probably around midnight, actually. Dana did come in around...
Dana is the UPM on this. Dana Scott is our UPM.
Mm-hmm.
She has an office in the production office.
She came in, I don't want to say, around 1 o'clock or so, and she's like, good night, is there anything you need from me? I'm like, no, there's nothing to do.
Did you and the APOC...
Melissa?
Yeah, Melissa, did you guys walk out together, or did she
earlier? No, she had to come in earlier so she could do, like, travel and stuff.
Okay, fair.
So she left around, I want to say, midnight or so, and then it was, like, 6 hours.
Well, dang, man, that means your whole Saturday was, like, shot with sleeping.
Yeah, it's all right. It was shot with no plans anyway.
Fair enough. So, we got some big movies to talk about, especially box office-wise.
Mm-hmm.
This week, War for Planet of the Apes beat Spider-Man. I'll be honest, I never would have seen that one coming.
Did not see that one coming.
Would have seen that. As a matter of fact, I thought War for Planet of the Apes would not have done the business it did. And it's number one this week, only been out 1 week, with a $150 million budget, 101 worldwide. That's not a bad start.
Not bad at all.
To be honest, I did not think it was going to break the even 50 or 60 million. I didn't think I had sort of a chance.
I don't think I know anyone that actually saw it is the thing.
People must love it because it really made some money, especially with some big movie. I mean, you still got Wonder Woman to watch, people haven't seen, Transformers still doing it, Baby Driver still pulling them in, Spider-Man, Despicable Me. I mean, it's some fierce competition, and it's still doing well. So, you know, Planet of the Apes, good for you. Spider-Man, number two this week, number one last week. With a budget of $175 million, it's doing a worldwide so far, as of time of this recording, is $469 million. That is not a small potatoes number.
No.
And we're going to get into what the other first movies of the reboots did in a little bit. Actually, we can just do that now. Well, for Spider-Man anyway. Spider-Man in 2002 had a $139 million budget and made, by the end of its run, $821 million. In 2002,
that's absurd.
Very respectable number.
A lot of money.
Very respectable number. And Spider-Man 3, I'm sorry, Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2012, we're doing the first, had a budget of $230 million. That was the Mark Webb first reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Had a budget of $230 million, ended up making $757 million. Now, for as many people as I talk to don't like that Spider-Man, that's not much below the original Spider-Man.
No, that's not much at all, actually.
Yeah. And then this... So far, you just heard what the Tom Holland movie did. $175 million budget, $469 million. So that you can compare a little bit. And Despicable Me, number three this week, number two last week. $80 million budget. That was the budget, $80 million. They finally put it up.
Oh, good.
Made $619 worldwide. That's pretty good. I don't know why you'd hide a budget for that. What did we predict last week? It was cost to make.
I thought it was somewhere around that. Or maybe it was Cars. Is Cars still up?
Yeah, Cars is definitely up there, but maybe it was Cars. Well, that's still a very good number for Despicable Me 3. Very enjoyable movie. Baby Driver, number four this week. Number three last week. Kendall's one of Kendall's absolute favorite directors, Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm.
His masterpiece, Baby Driver. Well, to me, masterpiece. Baby Driver, $34 million budget so far, $96 million worldwide.
96, come on, let's break 100.
I think, definitely will. I think proportionately, that's as good as Spider-Man is now. Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's just smaller numbers you're dealing with, but Baby Driver is a hell of a movie. The Big Sick, number 5 this week, number 8 last week, and moved up. No budget given, worldwide $16 million. That's not terrible for,
so I would say, a rom-com, so I'm going to assume that it was probably made around $30
million. So. Holly, you say the budget, you're guessing around $30
million? I think so, yeah.
That's fair. Holly Hunter, Zoe Kazan, Ray Romano are all in that. Judd Apatow and Barry Mendel produced it. So, and the director is Michael Showalter. So that's one I did not see, unfortunately. I just could not fit that one in. Wonder Woman, she's still wonderful. She's still number 6, number 4 last week. $149 million budget. Now, why couldn't they just make it 150?
I don't know. Someone really skimped out on that $1 million.
I mean, or it's in someone's pocket. One of the two.
Yeah.
$149 million budget, $764 million worldwide. You know, I got the chance to watch that again. I've made friends with some of the local movie theater people, and they do not force me to pay for movies anymore. though willing, I don't have to pay for them anymore. And I was able to watch that again. That movie, I think, is pretty good. I will say it's an incredibly solid movie.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think that'll hold up in another 5-10 years, and people will want to go back and see it. Just like
I tend to be a little harsher on movies than I should, only because I want them to be better than they usually are.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Another one, Wish Upon. Couldn't quite fit this one in. I wanted to. My weekend kind of got changed on Saturday when I was going to see that in the afternoon. Joey King, Ki Hong Lee, sorry if I said that wrong, and Ryan Phillippe are all in this, directed by John Linetti. Budget of $12 million, domestic just done $5 million, so that's not on track to make his money back. After opening weekend for a horror movie, that's usually the biggest weekend.
Right, yeah.
Especially in July. It's a weird time for a horror movie in July.
It is a very odd weird time. It's not a specifically summer
movie. Yeah, that's not at all. Cars 3, Pixar, still in the top 10. No, so that was the one. No budget given for this one. But $222 million worldwide. I can't imagine it was more. It was that much more than Despicable Me.
I'm assuming it was probably around $100 million for that film.
Yeah, so it's made $222. So it's already way in the positive for making the money back. So yeah, good for it. Transformers, my boy Michael Bay, still in the top 10. Number 9, number 5 last week. Although that's a sharp drop, four spots.
That's a big drop.
Especially in the same month it came out. Not a good drop. Production budget $217 million, with a worldwide gross so far $517. Not going to break the $1 billion mark. Sorry, Michael Bay. Try again later. I'm sure you've got the next one already lined up.
He's really struggling for money, that guy.
Yeah, he certainly is. Michael Bay. He's really
the last night to rake in the dough.
He's calling in favors to pay rent. I'm sure. Number 10, The House. Number 7 last week. This is Will Ferrell, Amy Poehler, a very good comedic duo. We've been watching them for years. Budget of $40 million, $28 million worldwide. Not great.
Yeah.
I think the wane of Will Ferrell has begun. His movies don't open like they used to.
No. What was the last movie that he did that opened really well?
Really well?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's find out, actually.
Do we have to go back to like Step Brothers or Talladega Nights? Or?
You know, or even Lego Movie that may have opened.
Okay. It's kind of a surprise.
Well, Lego Movie ended up with 257, but that's not because of Will Ferrell. That's because of the Lego Movie is awesome. Right. Daddy's Home ended up with $150 million. That's why it's getting a sequel with Mel Gibson, mind you.
All right.
I mean, that's not why it's getting Mel Gibson. I'm happy that Mel Gibson's in. So that's Zoolander 2, Lifetime Gross, just at $28 million. That's one of those weird, way too late sequels. Yeah. Anchorman 2 did $127 million. I don't think it deserved half of that. From what Anchorman was to Anchorman 2, it's just I did not enjoy it.
Again, my personal feelings about Anchorman, honestly, and Will Ferrell, to be fair, but
Megamind, that was animated. So nothing is really
hard. Do was what, let's try to find the point where it declined. Was it after Daddy's Home?
Well, Daddy's Home was recent. I'm trying to like the if there was a decline, it was before Daddy's Home. But Daddy's Home just happened to be funny. Old School, that was 2002. That was, I'm sure, a wonderful opening for Old School. Budget $24 million, ended up making $87 million. That's not, for radar comedy, that's pretty good.
That's
above the time. So there definitely has been a decline in Will Ferrell. I want to say probably, not after Elf, because everyone loved Elf. probably after Kicking and Screaming, people didn't like that one. I was remember that was 2005.
Can't say I ever saw it.
I was working at a movie theater at the time, and people didn't tend to like that one. So maybe that was when his decline began. But so that's your top 10. No surprises there. Oh, actually, there is a surprise. Planet of the Apes overcoming Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's
But still, it says Spider-Man's been out for a week. And
so, this week, Wolf Planet of the Apes came out, Wish Upon and the Big Sick. On July 21st, we have Dunkirk, my boy Nolan. He's, I'm sure, going to do all kinds of amazing things with this movie. Money-wise, anyway. Valerian, Save a Thousand Planets, Girls Trip. July 28th, Emotion Movie.
Yes.
Atomic Blonde. August 4th, Dark Tower, Detroit. Dark Tower, I think, one thing I wanted to say in the last episode, the Baby Driver episode, that was Baby Driver or Dark Tower. Those are my two for best movie of the
summer.
I love Baby Driver, but Dark Tower, I think, is going to be a little better quality-wise.
I'm still very, very tentative about the Dark Tower film.
Well, of course, because, well,
as a huge fan of the books,
yeah,
I will open my heart to it, but only just.
Fair enough. I can understand that. August 11th, we're into the almost school, almost starting up again. Annabelle Creation, The Glass Castle. August 18th, The Hitman's Bodyguard. My predictions. These are my personal predictions. Dunkirk is going to destroy because it's Christopher Nolan. The name now is selling him.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nike sells shoes, the name is selling Nolan. Valerian won't do anything. I don't like to speak ill of movies before they come out only because there's nothing to base it on, but I just don't think that movie's going to do anything. It doesn't. I've watched the trailer a number of times. I just don't see it doing anything.
Maybe it's really pulling its punches. Like, you're going to think this is a shitty movie, but then you come in, and it's just the greatest thing you've ever seen. I doubt it, because it's a $180 million
film. Who's the guy making that?
I don't know. Let's check it out.
Give me 1 second on that. That won't do. I don't think it's going to do anything. Atomic Blonde. I think that'll make a decent amount of money. I do. I think people like Charlize Theron. Mm-hmm. I think people like to see female protagonists.
It's got a good, it's got a great trailer too.
Yeah. Dark Tower, I think, is going to destroy. I really think that movie's going to do obscene amounts of money. For what it is. Let's not be...
Absolutely. You know, for right. Yeah. I mean...
Detroit will do good money, I think so. Can't swear to it. Annabelle, Does Anyone Care? Hitman's Bodyguard. That'll make decent money, I think. Everyone likes Ryan Reynolds right now because of Deadpool, and everyone has always loved Sam Jackson. So,
oh yeah, I will.
That's a good.
Despite being in The Spirit, which is
We'll talk about in a minute. Well, not later. Sigourney Weaver. We're moving current events. Sigourney Weaver talks about the Avatar sequels. First of all, first one came out in 2009. It's 2017. Where the hell are the sequels? Pandora is still in danger. She says, now I'm reading this from a quote, there's a very good reason why it turned out to be four sequels. Having read all of them, I think they're absolutely extraordinary and worth the wait. Again, I don't know how much that is her and how much that is promoting the sequels that have taken forever to come out. These films are...
Spoiler alert.
What's that?
Spoiler alert. She did not make it through.
Yeah, 8-year-old spoiler.
Are they bringing her back?
I don't know. These films are very much about the peril of this beautiful planet, and Cameron is continuing the same theme of greed and callousness of the corporations and the plight of the indigenous people. We've seen it done a number of times. Dancing with Wolves, The Last Samurai, one of my favorite movies, and then Avatar. To me, this is just Dances with Avatar. I mean, from the beginning to the end.
It's Pocahontas again.
Yeah, I mean, it's... But, I mean, Cameron is absolutely one of those directors. If he has something coming out, you don't have any excuse not to watch his movie.
Right.
He has proved time and time again that he is worth the $15, or 10, 15 bucks, wherever you live in the country. Again, that quote I just read was straight off of the internet. I wanted to see what she was saying about it, and that was straight off the internet. The Irishman, Martin Scorsese, for the next movie, his cast, I think is an interesting cast because Scorsese... He likes to use some of the same people. De Niro, Pacino, whose deal is not yet done. At the time I saw this article, Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel, and Bobby Cannavale, who was in Daddy's Home, Ant-Man, Paul Blart. That's an interesting cast. What do you think about The Irishman?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of Scorsese's common denominators. It's got De Niro, it's got Pacino, it's got Joe Pesci. It's the people that I expect for a Scorsese film. And I've never been a huge Scorsese fan. I still think it would be a decent film. Especially now that he's doing Irish instead of Italian. Let's see what you do. Okay. I'm down for it.
And we have... this... I found was an interesting thing. I've been following the episode 8. I have lots of friends that have been working on episode 7 and episode 8. So I follow that, not super closely, but close. But Mark Hamill, now, according to Disney CEO Bob Iger and J.J. Abrams, they both said this is Mark Hamill's best performance and certainly Oscar-worthy. That's, I don't know, again, I don't know how much that is promoting the movie and how much of that is actually them thinking what they said. So, again, it's hard to tell because the movie's, you know, months away from coming out. And to go with that piece of news, the new Episode 8 trailers are up, and it shows all of the Jedi, each character has their own episode, and below them is, I kind of took it as, well, below them is like the image starts to taper off. And I like to see it as vanishing because the title is The Last Jedi, means maybe the Jedi Order after this movie ceases to exist and it becomes a real struggle between the Alliance or the Rebellion and the Empire. Mm-hmm. No more Jedi. Of course, that means Rey and Ren will have to happen to them because they're Jedi. So I don't know. I think those posters are pretty cool. If you're a Star Wars fan, check those out. I'm sure they're up on every website right now.
Yeah. Last thing in news, this actually just got dropped today. Doctor Who has a new doctor. It's Jodie Whittaker, who is famous for, she's been in a lot of things, but most notably the BBC's Broadchurch. And it's the first time that the doctor has ever been played by a woman, which is pretty huge for the character. This show has been going since the 60s, I want to say, since the early 60s. And never has the main character been played by a woman. So that's really cool, as far as I'm concerned. I'm excited to see what she can do. I'm excited to see if Doctor Who can get itself out of the rut that it's currently in.
Is it in a rut? People love Doctor Who.
I do love it. It's just after maybe the midpoint of season 6 of the reboot series, I kind of had to stop. I couldn't deal with Stephen Moffat's anymore.
That's fair. I can understand that. Whatever. I mean, people really do love Doctor Who.
People do. I know people that will watch it, whether it's good or not, just because they love the series so much. They love the characters, and they love the universe that it's in. So,
okay, fair enough. Okay, Geostorm. I thought this trailer looked kind of interesting, and I have more to say about it than I should, given how it's a trailer, you know, the Geostorm trailer with Gerard Butler, Abbie Cornish, Ed Harris, Jim Sturgess, and Andy Garcia. It looks, I mean, whenever I see a movie like this, who made all those disaster movies? Roland Emmerich. Yeah. Funny how I didn't finish saying it. He's not making this one, so.
It is from the producer of Independence Day, I believe.
That's fair.
From the trailer that I
saw. What do you think? First thoughts?
I mean, it's funny that you immediately bring up Roland Emmerich, because I was watching this and I'm like, this is, someone threw every single Roland Emmerich movie into a blender. And this is the film they came up with.
With Gerard Butler.
and then, because it's got the huge ice storms from Day After Tomorrow, it's got the huge waves from 2012, it's got buildings crumbling like Independence Day Resurgence, it's got all of these huge tropes, and it's got, you know, parts of it are in space, just like Independence Day. It's just, I don't know. Could it be good? Sure. Am I expecting it to be good? Not really.
Not at all.
It looked very pretty. I will hand it to that.
You know, the trailer, though, it kind of comes off, the tone, I think, is weird because the world is in, you know, is in danger of not being anymore. And the trailer was like this, it's always playing like kind of upbeat rock music, and like, I don't know if that's the right message. It's in a weird trailer. And some other trailers that I've seen in the past, I remember, this one's never going to leave my memory. When you watch the trailer for Man of the Year with Robin Williams, you go in that movie thinking 100% comedy. It is not a comedy at all. It's a very serious political thriller. But so that's, I don't know. I will watch it because I love Gerard Butler. I love End of the World movies. And Ed Harris. Ed Harris is one of my favorite players, too.
He is excellent.
The Greatest Showman. I'm so excited about this. I saw it. I was in love with it. I watched it once. I watched it two times. Watched it three times, all in a matter of 10 minutes. I cannot wait for this movie. Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron, two of my favorite people in the world, come together. Michelle Williams in it. It's P.T. Barnum in the, right, the circus?
It's the story of P.T. Barnum, it looks like. And
It looks kind of like Big Fish meets Water for Elephants in kind of a weird mashup. You use the term blender. It could be. What are your thoughts?
Well, it looks very beautiful. Actually, the art for this film is absolutely outstanding. And I'm excited to see Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron back on the screen again after the last Hugh Jackman film was Logan, I guess, right?
Hugh Jackman is always a winner for me. Right, always a winner for me. Polaroid. I've never seen any of these people. I'm going to try. I apologize that I butchered their name. I don't mean to. Madeleine Petch, Catherine Prescott, Katie Stevens. This is this is your generic horror movie. I think generic. About they find this old camera and it takes pictures, and the shadow in the picture, as the movie's called Polaroid, it prints out a picture right away, moves from picture to picture, indicating which victim is going to be next.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your basic.
It sounds like basically the Polaroid camera creates this like voodoo representation, because there's a part in the trailer where they try to burn the picture to remove the evidence, to get rid of them. And like the lady starts on fire in the middle
the girl
of
starts her, on her fire.
School lunchroom.
But this is like, at least this movie has a different name once every 2 years, if not every year. There's one very similar to it. Mm-hmm. Rings for one of them. We covered that a little while ago, Ring. Well, those are your trailers. I mean, nothing too exciting. The Greatest Showman for me, I cannot wait for that movie. I'm so excited. I cannot wait for that movie. I have this really soft spot for those kind of magical, like I said, Big Fish is always one of my favorites. I really love the one with Johnny Depp about Peter Pan. Can't think of the name. Finding Neverland.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoy that one. I really like movies where people really seem to find magic in the ordinary. I think mm-hmm. that's always awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. A moment. We cannot delay any further.
Yep.
Spider-Man, the third iteration has hit. Now, the one advantage that this Spider-Man movie has over the others is it's tied into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. So, love it, hate it, this is the Spider-Man we're going with. There's no turning back.
This is finally they worked out whatever legal disputes they had to do in order to get Spider-Man a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Do you think it was a big deal to do that?
I think it was actually a pretty big deal, because Sony's gone through two reboots of the characters, and most of them, they've done well, and audiences have continued to see them, even through Spider-Man 3, even through The Amazing Spider-Man 2. People still come back to see this character because it's a character that they love, and now Sony has decided that it's going to partner up with Disney and Marvel and actually push out a Spider-Man that's a part of the Marvel Universe again.
There's a lot I loved about the Spider-Man, a lot I didn't love about the Spider-Man. I tend to take notes while I'm just one-word key phrases notes while I am watching.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into that, though, there is... there's a list. This is just in my head. I wrote all the superhero movies I could think onto a piece of paper and then painstakingly placed them in order, and I moved them around. The spot where every single one of these is not. It was not there to begin with. That's how much moving around is all. Except for Electro is always the worst.
It was always number zero.
My list from worst to best franchises. This is not an exhaustive list. It's not an exclusive list. It's just some of the superhero movies. The majority of them, going from worst to best. This is my personal opinion. Elektra, Spirit, Spawn, Catwoman, Daredevil, Fantastic Four, Judge Dredd, RoboCop. It's kind of a superhero. I mean, classify it as a superhero movie. Doctor Strange, Sin City, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, LXG, Punisher, Rocketeer, Blade, Watchmen, Ant-Man, Guardian of the Galaxy, Hulk, Hellboy, Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass is a lot higher on my list than there would have been almost any other list, I'm sure.
I love Kick-Ass. I agree with you.
That's... Matthew Vaughn was more born to make that movie. Mm-hmm. X-Men, Wonder Woman, Batman, Spider-Man, Thor, Iron Man and Captain America. Now, I got to be honest. Captain America and Iron Man went back and forth in my head at least 100 times. Mm-hmm. Captain America was number one and Iron Man was number two. They went back and forth for... Right now, the resting place is Captain America being number one is... This no one's list... There's no way anyone's going to have this list identical to mine. There's no way. I put LXG way higher than anyone would have. I put, even if I gave someone a list of these superheroes and their respective movies, I don't think anyone's list would ever come close. Ant-Man is much higher on my list than I think it should be. Guardians is much higher. Hulk. I'm not really a fan of Hulk as a hero. I just never cared for Banner.
I never really remember either of the films that came out. I don't remember the one in, 2001, 2002.
2002. We don't talk about
I don't. The Edward Norton one, right? Yeah.
2006 is a better one.
2000, yeah. I don't remember either of those films. And then all of a sudden he shows up in the Avengers in 2012.
Not okay, Ed Norton.
Yeah. Ed Norton, now played by Mark Ruffalo, and they seem to have got him right.
Arguably, Bust is the much better Hulk. Sorry, Hulk.
Yeah, yeah. He's good.
Do you have any? Do you take issue with any on that list at all? You can just pick out a few and just say what you think, or why they're not in the place you would put them.
The Spirit, I think, absolutely deserves to be at the bottom of the barrel. Just because that film, I saw it with my dad, and it made no sense. It was trying too hard to be Sin City, and instead it just turned into this odd... I don't even know who that film was for, because it was R-rated, but it was really
childish. Sin City was R-rated.
Yeah, but The Spirit was like R-rated, but it was like childish and strange, and I felt like no one really wanted to see that film. It's sad to say, but... It was definitely Samuel Jackson.
What about Spawn being third from the bottom? I feel like I'm going to get a lot of backlash from this one.
I don't know. I have not seen Spawn, to tell you the truth, so I don't know if I would be able to offer. And I know you put Daredevil this far on the list, and I'd like to clarify that is the Ben Affleck Daredevil.
Oh, yes.
The TV show.
You know, I'm talking about movies, Daredevil, as far as, you know... I was a big fan of Daredevil when it came out. Mm-hmm. Certain scenes I love. I'm a romantic guy. I love certain scenes really stand out in my mind forever. I never forget them. Like this, for instance, the scene on the rooftop where even though he can't see, the rain's falling and making, like he can see her face through the rain hitting it. Yep. Like that's just, it's a great scene. I mean, mm-hmm. especially when the rose falls in the beginning and the end, it's, I think very well done, those particular parts. I just think the movie, Ben Affleck was not meant to play Daredevil.
No, not at all.
What do you think of, I mean, any of those six I got, like LSG?
I want a little bit of clarification on specifically which Batman films are you including?
The Nolan Batman
films.
The franchise as a whole, but when someone says the Batman franchise, I think of the Nolan movies. Sure. I don't think of, although, I mean, there's not a particular reason except for I liked the Nolan Batman universe more than I liked the one Tim Burton set up and then kind of the rest of them kind of followed as far as... I like the Nolan ones better, so I'm referencing the Nolan ones as it's high. It's 1, 2, 3. It's number 5 from the top. But when I say that, I'm talking about the Nolan ones.
Sure.
So
I can definitely agree that Batman Begins and The Dark Knight are absolutely fantastic. I was not a fan. I think I actually said this last week. I was not a fan of Dark Knight Rises so much, but I think The Dark Knight alone deserves to put. Batman.
I'm not as big a fan of The Dark Knight as most people, and I'll tell you why. It's because a great part of this, to me in my mind, deals in with Christopher Nolan's pretension as a director, and like he almost makes movies like Michael Bay makes movies for a certain audience. Nolan makes movies for a certain audience, and I've heard this in conversation with people in this very office that Christopher Nolan is just a more intelligent, a better Michael Bay. Ooh. So I know it's going to hit you hard right now, but think about that for the next 20 minutes, and then I'll ask you again before the episode's over, and you tell me if that's more of a fair statement.
Okay, all right.
It might
not be. I'll let that stew. I feel like I'm going to have some backlash against that. But
anything else out of in the list
out of place? Out of place? No, not necessarily. I think personally, Doctor Strange deserves to be, and in fact, Sin City deserves to be a little bit higher.
Higher, yeah. I wrestle with that one. The reason it's not is because A Dame to Kill For just wasn't good.
That's fair.
it just was not good.
I had not thought of it until you said it just now. I didn't even see it just because it was so mismarketed.
No one else did either. My box office. So. Right. Doctor Strange. I can imagine people like, what, Doctor Strange, so low. Doctor Strange is the lowest one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's part of that now, isn't he? Marvel. Yep. Yeah, he is. He's in Infinity War. So, so Doctor Strange is the lowest. Doctor Strange to me is on the same level of, you know, we spoke last week about The Hobbit and the and the prequel trilogy to Star Wars. It's all green screen. There's what real humanity is there if you're acting in front of a green screen all the time?
Right.
Now, I understand that's a decision that comes from way above, you know, anyone's head. It's you're going to see on screen.
Right.
But, I mean, I have a hard time. I have a hard time with something like that. And if you, I mean, one of the things, I know people watch a lot of stuff on YouTube. And they watch a lot of behind the scenes. And one of the things that I've always loved was Red Letter Media when Plinkett tears apart the, have you seen those? They're hilarious. When he tears apart the episodes 1, 2, and 3, and Ewan McGregor talks for a minute, he cuts in one of the excerpts of Ewan McGregor talking about acting in front of a green screen, fighting General Grievous. He didn't know where to swing the sight. He just was just doing things. Like, I mean, you lose some of the humanity.
And, well, as long as he looks cool, they'll make the entire environment around him
right. That's the thing. The
coolest that it can.
And it's, I mean, and I'm a big proponent of Transformers, and that's also, that movie is much special effects and, you know, visual effect, green screen. But, I mean, also, there's no humanity. There's so little humanity in Transformers. Sure. Like, that's certainly belongs in the con column with Transformers. I mean, but as far as why those movies just don't hold their weight anymore, I say anymore because the first one did. You can argue with me until you're blue in the face.
But I will.
The first one was actually a decent movie. So
we're not going to get into that again.
And you know what I just thought of? I had to add to the list today. Rocketeer. I just thought of it, and I was walking in here.
Yeah,
I like that one a lot.
I don't.
It's low on the list. Lower on the list than I think it should be.
I must have seen it at some point. I just don't remember it whatsoever. When did it come out?
It had to be mid to late 90s.
Okay, all right. It was that film.
Young Jennifer Connelly.
I couldn't say that I've seen it. No,
maybe I'm wrong about that, but. What about the top? What about the top
10? I think Captain America is definitely beating out Iron Man here. I'll agree with you because Captain America has not had a single bad film in its series.
I don't think so either. Iron Man's been questionable.
They've all been really fantastic, and they've changed. They've basically been the spine around which the
Marvel Cinematic Universe is like. Taken shape.
Right, yeah, so that's interesting. Because he was the first Avenger. In Winter Soldier, that was when the whole Hail Hydra thing came to light, and that was huge in terms of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and in terms of everything else. And then in Civil War, it was the freaking Civil War for Marvel. So he has been huge in actually shaping the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and all of those films are...
I agree. Well, and the character resonates with me. Again, this list is also... There's a lot of bias in this list for me because I factored in character and some good movies, some bad movies. But the character of Captain America is always... You know, he's a Boy Scout. He does what's right and he doesn't kill. He does what's right. I mean, he does kill. When he hits someone with that shield, they're dead.
They're probably they're dead. You're getting hit in the face at 100 miles an hour with the hardest material on Earth.
Yeah, you're dead. But, I mean, as far as we're concerned, he doesn't kill people. You know, he avoids that. Thor is number 3 down from the top. Thor was actually, when I first made this list, Thor was number 7. And I, number 7 from the top, not from the bottom, but from the top. And he moved over the course of the decision-making process, he moved up quite a bit. So, I don't know. That's my list. I don't know. People are going to, you know, I'm sure that people will not agree with that. But
that's point of making lists is so people can argue with you nonstop.
Worst to best Spider-Man. Before we get into the Spider-Man Homecoming, worst to best Spider-Man movies.
Okay.
This is not so much a... I think this is pretty much cut and dry as far as... Again, I put this all on a piece of paper, and I just went from worst to best, and I think two of them changed. Just Spider-Man 2 and Homecoming were always number 1 and number 2. What changed was Spider-Man and what changed was The Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2. They flipped, but my list from worst to best, being 6 Spider-Man movies so far, have been Spider-Man 3, 2007. Spider-Man 2002, again, this is worst to best. Amazing Spider-Man 2, 2014. Amazing Spider-Man 2012. And Spider-Man Homecoming took number two. That just came out this 2017. And Spider-Man 2, 2004, I still think is the best Spider-Man movie.
I wish I remembered it better because I've not seen
with Doc
it
Ock.
in a good 10 years. I remember maybe the finale of it, and I remember Doc Ock. But beyond that, I don't remember too much about that film.
There's a lot in Homecoming that owes to Spider-Man 2. They did a lot. Again, I mean, with that reboot, which people, I guess, didn't like because they moved away from it. The Andrew Garfield amazing? Movies, they don't exist. But they're the Tobey Maguire movies. So they took a lot of Homecoming from the 2004 Spider-Man 2 as far as choice and what people resonated with. Mm-hmm. I think one of the scenes they took people really liked that must have worked was when in Spider-Man 2, when he's slinging the web to stop the train, and then and then this one he's holding the bars together so with the webs, and like he's really like all of his strength is being sapped to do this, and that's one of them. But and Tobey Maguire, worst to best Spider-Man, who the actor you think?
This list, I'm gonna have to. It's three people, so I'm going to say Maguire and then Garfield, and then I like Tom Holland best, actually.
So you, Maguire's your worst, Holland's your best, Garfield's in the middle.
Yeah.
For me, it's it's funny how we both don't like Tobey Maguire. Yeah. And again, that's personal. It's a lot, my decisions factor personal into it. Tobey Maguire, Tom Holland is number two, and I liked Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man the best. I liked him as Spider-Man of the three. He was my favorite.
That's all right. That's all right. It's okay to be wrong sometimes.
Thanks, Kendall.
I think when I think about Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, I just think of the parts that I did not like him as, and that's specifically in Spider-Man 3 when he starts becoming an emo.
No one liked that.
Have you seen the video? There's a scene where he's like dancing down the street and he's listening to music or something, and then they recut it so that they took all the music out and he just looks like a complete asshole. He's like dancing around.
I can see how that would be a thing.
He goes into a shop and he's dancing, and then he just comes out and people are standing around and just going like, what is going on?
I can see that. Just like there was that, wasn't there a video about, I haven't seen it, I've heard of it, but wasn't there a video about the Mummy where they took out everything but Tom Cruise screaming. it's the same. But like you, without context, everything's dumb.
Sure.
So yeah, that's
I don't know. What are your thoughts on Tobey Maguire? Why?
I just didn't like him, but it's not his fault. I don't. it's just one of those things. I don't think Spider-Man 3 absolutely is. I don't think Spider-Man 3 is fair. I don't think it's fair to say Spider-Man 3 is the worst. I think of the movies, it definitely is the worst. There's no. I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind. I just that was from what I read. That it was in production hell. I mean, Raimi didn't want to let it get away from him, so he just played ball. But I mean, there was too many villains. They told him he had to add Venom, and he said the story's not ready for Venom yet. And the Sandman was already in there, and the Goblin was he was still kind of an enemy to Peter. So I mean, it's just there was too much going on. That's what a lot of people say. Would you agree with that? There's just too much going on.
Well, it had the same problem in Amazing Spider-Man 2. Actually, they seem to think by throwing in every single Spider-Man villain into a single film that it could make it a really really strong, interesting film. That's what was absolutely wrong with Spider-Man 3 was you had Venom, you had Sandman, you had
Venom absolutely is his own movie,
his own movie villain, because once they, I think it's maybe halfway through the film where they introduce Sandman he's not in the beginning. I think the beginning has Venom, and we see some of, doesn't Goblin come back? I'm trying to remember now. Who else is in Spider-Man 3?
James Franco is
right.
He's Goblin Jr.
Yeah.
Sandman, Sandman and Venom. Those are the villains.
All right, I forgot that it was a.
The problem with that is they're all so intricate to the Spider-Man lore that one like, or maybe not Sandman. I actually don't know the Spider-Man lore as far as the comics are concerned. But judging from Raimi's choice of using Sandman in the movie, it kind of makes me feel like he's important in the Spider-Man lore.
Yeah.
Very important.
If I remember right, he's actually in one of the first maybe 20
Is he the guy comics. That kills...
No.
Or is it, I mean, is he there when it happens, when Uncle Ben gets... I don't know if they changed that.
I don't okay, remember, actually. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, if that is true, then he's very, very integral obviously, to the Spider-Man lore. Yeah. But, so that's... Those are some lists for you to, you know, for you to think about, some food for thought. Jumping into it, Spider-Man 2017 Spider-Man Homecoming starts, interestingly enough, there's no origin story.
No,
he's already Spider-Man. Like, well, when we see him as when we catch up with Tom Hollander's character, Peter Park, he's already Spider-Man. He's very self-aware of what he is, because he's already, by the time we meet him in the timeline, he's already fought in Civil War, mm-hmm. chosen a side with Iron Man, mm-hmm. Kind of gang pressed into service. We don't get the origin story. We know anyone can probably tell you the Spider-Man origin story pretty well by now, but
yeah.
we don't have that. We do have is it starts before after the first Avengers movie, and then it starts before the first Avengers movie, and then we see Tom Holland getting ready to go fight in Civil War, and then years later, and then we get into post Civil War,
sure,
where Tom Holland is your friendly neighborhood Spider Man. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start there. Tony Stark in a cat shirt, I loved it. Who doesn't love that?
Robert Downey Jr. was born to play Iron Man. He was born to be this character, honestly. As amazing as he is in Tropic Thunder, which I think is probably his best role.
Do you think Tropic Thunder is his best role?
I absolutely do. That's fair. Okay. He's so incredible. Had it come out a different year than The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger's performance, I think he would have won Best Supporting Actor that year. He was just so, so good in that. But Robert Downey Jr. Is now what people will forever consider Tony Stark.
Fair. Okay.
Job
security.
Job security. I don't know if he wants to do it for too much longer, since you know you put a cape on these actors and then they feel like they never can leave it again.
But why would I mean? To me, it doesn't make it like I don't understand why Daniel Craig doesn't want to keep doing Bond.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's more his decision than it is the producing team's decision, but to leave, I mean. But I don't know why. If you had something that people love, just why not just keep doing it?
That's fair. I mean,
you don't want to get typecast. You're already typecast. If you right, have to think about that, you're already typecast.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's obviously good money for him, but I think part of it is, as an actor, you're going to go back into this franchise, what, every two, maybe less than that.
Two to 3 years.
Maybe every year, and sometimes they're just not up for that.
Well, especially with all the heroes now intermingling in the movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're guaranteed mm-hmm. to see one of them.
I mean, in Homecoming, there's so much of Chris Evans. There's so much Robert Downey Jr. So they're coming back no matter what. And Jon Favreau is in this one as well.
Happy.
Yeah,
he's living.
Yeah.
He's happy. So he is. So, I mean, he is, like, successfully integrated from Iron Man to Spider-Man. He drove someone else at one time, too. Maybe I'm wrong about mm-hmm. that, but he drove, I mean, he's a driver. He's fun. He's quite funny in this, actually. Kind of forced at times, but I'm okay with it. Go on, give me some more thoughts about Spider-Man before we really get into it.
Spider-Man here's what I love about Spider-Man as a character, is he has the right amount of superpowers. He can be hurt, he can be killed. He is very, very threatened, but he's always really smart. He has to try really hard to defeat his enemies. But his powers, they make sense. They're all limited enough that if something happens, that you understand why he can or can't use his powers. And in terms of like other superheroes, you've got Batman. This is just comparing to Batman and Superman. Batman can do whatever the hell he wants because he's rich, right? And Superman can do whatever the hell he wants because he's an alien and he has infinity bajillion freaking powers that he can use, depending on which iteration. Spider-Man, if he wants to do something new, he has to invent it himself. He has to figure out a new way of working out his problems. He's basically a smart guy that's now trying to do good because he was given an extraordinary gift, I think.
That's fair. He's young in this one, younger than he was in the other ones. He's 15 now. I didn't know if he was. Do we ever get an age before this movie of how old he like in Civil War? Do we ever know how old he was?
I think they said he was 14 in Civil War.
I don't remember them saying that, but maybe they did, and I just don't remember. Yeah. But I thought that was interesting to make him as young and the love interest older than him.
Yeah, I think she's a senior.
It said once or twice that she's a senior girl. But
he is a sophomore kid in high school.
He is, and they didn't. This movie carried on the tradition of putting Spider-Man in front of an American flag numerous times.
Yeah.
They always do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is red and blue, so I mean, that it just works well visually. I don't know.
He is, and everyone, I really enjoyed. Now, again, I don't know how much this is like them trying to be different than the other two this time, but I really enjoyed that it wasn't the common love interest from the other two.
Right.
So we have yet to see either one of those characters in this one. It wasn't everyone knows who he is. Like everyone, hey, Spider-Man, everyone's just waving at him like he's just sitting on a building eating a churro. I mean, I like the total departure from the other two movies and twisting it, just giving us something new, because you know the 2012 movie was very similar to
three films that came before it. Right?
It's almost the same origin story. I mean, I like the departure. I like the departure in the same time. I like the similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Lee, of course, is in this one.
Yep, love him.
I like the identity theft when. The picture of identity theft. When he walks in the bank when in the beginning these guys are.
This scene is actually in one of the trailers where these dudes are robbing a bank with their super high tech weaponry, and he comes in and then they turn to look at him and they're all wearing like Avengers masks. Like one of them is a Thor mask, one of them is a Hulk mask, and that whole scene and his banter with them is just brilliant.
I think so. I really do. I think the banter. I think one of Holland's strengths is he is able to banter well on screen with people. I don't think that a large number of actors can do that, but I think Tom Holland, as young as he is got a good, he's got a good.
He's got so much energy.
He really does.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that could have been how he's playing the character, though. Just always be bright eyed all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's certainly possible. Well, the Avengers are mentioned right away in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And the villain is kind of the Vulture by Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
His company has a contract to clean up after the Avengers movie when those giant flying metal fish, you see one in the, I don't know what else, I forget what they're called.
They're giant alien worm fish that fly.
Giant alien G-A-W-F-T-F. alien tech. And before his crew is fired, he is able to smuggle out some of it in a truck, and then he and his start to do villainy with this alien tech. Mm-hmm. And as we walk into the bank robbing scene of Spider-Man walking on these guys that have high-tech weapons, and that's kind of where the movie kicks off, is the first time Spider-Man failed to foil a bad guy. He failed to stop a bad guy. They get away from him in that scene. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that little bank scene, I will say. May, of course, is clueless
of
who Spider-Man is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have taken it one step further, making it so different. I would have just said she knows from the beginning. Just she's aware of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, by extension of him being so young, I love that kind of, he's a superhero. He has to deal with choice. He has to deal with pimples and girlfriends and friends and high school and being in detention. I love that you have so much on your plate. And there was a lot of that in the Tobey Maguire's, a lot of that in the Andrew Garfield ones. I think more in the Tobey Maguire one, especially toward the third one when he just, or the second one, he had a really hard time balancing everything.
Right.
And being a superhero on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting choice. I will say a lot of people probably didn't like that because it kind of rooted Spider-Man in this. He's young. Why is he so young in this movie? Like, I don't know. Maybe to me, I can see why some people would say that. But again, I don't know. Thoughts on Spider-Man being so young?
I think that it's actually a huge strength of this film is it shows that Spider-Man is this young character. He is struggling to figure out
who he is. Who he alone, is. There who the hero is.
There is a part near the end of the film where I won't give away too much of it, but you really see how much of a kid he still is. He's struggling. He just really needs help from someone else. And it's a...
Yeah, that's a very defining moment, actually.
It's a huge...
That's the Obi. That's the Obi-Wan Kenobi moment.
Right. Yeah. And he realizes that he has to, you know, start growing up. It's a much a coming of age for Spider-Man as it is him just rebelling against the world.
I mean, Stark is pretty integral in absolutely. That, in that role. He's very... he's the reason why Spider-Man grows up. We're taking the suit from... As it's in the trailer. It's not a spoiler. It's in the trailer. After again, a plan to stop these bad guys goes wrong, Tony Stark, is it after the barge scene? It's after the ferry scene.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. He tries to stop the Vulture and his men on the ferry, and he fails. That's the scene I'm talking about with trying to use webs to hold it together so no one gets hurt, and Iron Man has to come help him, and then he takes his suit back. And the greatest, I think the best line in the movie comes right there, is... He says, "I'm nothing without this suit," and Iron Man says, "Well, that's the reason you shouldn't have it."
Right. Yeah.
If you're nothing without the suit, then you shouldn't have it. Yeah. So, I thought that was a very fine choice of dialogue. I can't even express how much I love that.
And it makes perfect sense for Iron Man to say that, given the three films that he's had, where that's been his exact struggle. Is he's made all these amazing things, and what he's had to struggle through is like having them taken away from him, basically. And it makes perfect sense for them to have that same exact problem in this film.
I agree. That's certainly one of the strengths. We have a lot of other people in this movie that I want to make mention of. For instance, I like Marissa Tomei as May.
She is so great.
I haven't seen her a lot lately, but I like her as May. I think she's a much younger May than... The other two, right?
As far as the age of the character? They actually use that quite a bit, and I like how they use that, because Tony Stark is very clearly interested in dating Aunt May.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's just extremely uncomfortable
for Peter Parker. Is it uncomfortable, though? Is it?
It's like your father figure wants to start dating your aunt figure. And so it's so uncomfortable for him the entire time.
Well, there is an uncomfortable scene, like you can just see it coming a mile away, but it is, I thought, I would have done it differently, but I thought it worked the way it was done. There is a scene, and this isn't spoiling anything because you know who they are. Well, the twist, of course, is when Peter shows up to take his date, who answers the door? Like, that's the twist, is like, the Vulture's relationship.
That's almost giving away too much, because that reveal for me is when it stopped being a good film and started being a great film.
Really?
Yeah.
That's when. Okay, that's fair. I mean, I don't even think I'd go. I don't. Never mind. I was gonna say. I was gonna say. I don't think this film is great. I think it's pretty good.
I'm gonna disagree with you there. That's fair. I think this is the best iteration of Spider-Man that we have ever had. And while I'm not completely crazy about everything that happens in this film, I think it's, I want another one as soon as I can.
Well, I agree. I mean, good on my scale is pretty good. Yeah. Seeing as how most movies don't even make that far. But again, that's my personal, I mean, if you disagree, you're more than welcome. Mm-hmm. As long as you have reason to back that up. There's a lot I didn't like.
Go for it.
About this movie. I think... His age was a big, as much as I liked him being young, I think it works against the seriousness of the movie. There wasn't, that's the one thing I think was lacking in this iteration of Spider-Man that I loved from the Tobey Maguire and even Andrew Garfield is that sense of seriousness, that sense of someone's really going to die.
Right.
Or someone has died or... This was almost tongue-in-cheek kind of,
sure,
to me,
sure.
Anyway.
It's definitely lighthearted. I think a lot of that has to do, something that stands out to me is they don't mention Uncle Ben once throughout the entire film.
That was probably a decision made early on, though. I'm guessing it was made early on.
Yeah, that's made very early on, and I think that's actually one of the strengths of the film is it's not his origin story again. It's not about the dark side of being super powerful.
Well, he has mentioned this in a very indirect way.
Yeah.
Parker's friend who...
Ned.
Ned, yes, Ned. When Parker comes in and, like, so May doesn't hear him, he comes in very carefully. You know, he's on the ceiling and uses a web to shut the door, and then the camera turns around, and there's Ned sitting on Parker's bed because they had plans to hang out and build a Death Star. I mean, and then Ned finds out real quick, and then as a reason why to respond to Ned saying, why don't you just tell May? You know, he says, after all that's happened, I don't want to put her through this. Sure. Like, so that's the Uncle Ben reference.
Exactly, exactly. So. It's referenced as backstory, but it's never, you know, there's no line where it's like, this reminds me of exactly what your Uncle Ben used to do. It's like, there's nothing like that. They've clearly been past that for at least, I don't know.
And I really like that part, that even though, again, I'm happy we don't have the origin story, but then at the same token, I wanted to see Ben. I liked Ben, especially how you saw the Spider-Man 3, the 2007 Spider-Man 3, the Venom one, how what actually happened that night.
Mm.
And then, yeah, that's a very powerful scene, I think. Maybe one of the most powerful scenes in that entire in that three-movie franchise, if you're just going to isolate those three movies. I think that is one of the more powerful moments. Because he finally finds out what happened. He didn't find it out. And this one without Uncle Ben is like, especially in spite of the Amazing Spider-Man, it's the 2012, you know, the seriousness of Uncle Ben dying and then Captain Stacy on the rooftop, which I think that is phenomenally done on the rooftop. I mean, again, things stay with me in my head for whatever reason. I really love that scene at the end of Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man, 2012, when he's just thwarted the Lizard's plan. That's what the villain was, the Lizard,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah.
He's just thwarted the Lizard's plan, and then, you know, Captain Stacy he makes him promise to leave Gwen out of it.
Yeah.
Just don't talk to her ever again, she's going to become a target. Mm-hmm. And then, I love the shot that follows is you see it silhouetted by the lights, by the dark night, no pun intended, by the very dark night sky and the lights in the background. Captain Stacy is sitting, kind of still silhouetted, and Peter's like, as he's dying, Peter's like on his knees, like trying to save him. And then like he passes away, and then this wonderful score, I forget who did the score, I'll look that up in a minute, but comes up and then you see Stacy just like his life force leaves him, and then Peter just like sits, he just like very powerful angry yell because he couldn't save him.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course there's that excellent especially with story with he makes that promise to Captain Stacy and then immediately breaks it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my god, this next movie is going to be fantastic, but it wasn't as you can see in my list, it wasn't
terrible by most stretch of the imagination, but what I found out through watching these films is that to make a good superhero film, and I suppose to make a good film in general, is you need a good villain. And that's what this movie had that a lot of these other ones didn't, was Michael Keaton as Toomes, as the Vulture. He is threatening. He is a huge part of Peter Parker's life. He's a constant presence throughout the film, and that actually makes him a really threatening villain because he doesn't want to destroy the world. He just wants to steal some stuff.
That I thought was interesting too. He doesn't want to really hurt people. He just wants take care of his family.
Yeah, he wants to take care of his family. He wants to maintain his like upper middle class lifestyle.
So he's not like the Joker and just wants to see the world burn,
mm-hmm.
as Michael Caine says as Alfred. Mm-hmm. Some men just want to see the world burn. He just wants to live. He just wants to have his family with him and his and just live. Like, because he's mad that his contract got taken away. He put so much, as in that scene, you find out he put so much money into buying trucks because that job was going to be such a long job and he needed all of them. And then they took it right out from under him. Mm-hmm. Shield people, no doubt.
Right.
Yeah. Covering up what happened. And then he just kind of lost it. And then he had that truckload of alien tech. And just however that happens, as far as villains created, that's what happened. So that's... Mm-hmm. I think you're right on that particular point. Is the villain is interesting because I mean, in 2002 Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire, what was the Goblin's aim? The Green Goblin.
I don't even remember.
He was trying to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah,
I remember there was a scene.
I think it was a world destroying you know, I'm going to poison everyone kind of
thing. And then the lizard in the 2012 version, he was trying to make everyone like him by watching that crap in the air.
He's trying to make people into dinosaurs.
That was right, right? Okay. And then this one, yeah, it's a very interesting scene. And I think the best scene in this movie is the car, is the scene when he's in a car with Keaton. Or maybe one of the best. Yeah, there's another one in my mind, but with...
They are out of costume. Without giving away too much about the film, they're out of costume. They meet each other again, and Michael Keaton slowly starts to figure it out. And it's a huge, huge, really tense scene between the two.
Tense barely describes
it. Right, yeah, wonderful. It was so perfect, and that's actually probably one of the strongest parts of this film. I think so. Even when they're out of costume, there's huge tension, there's conflict, there's a struggle between the two of them, even when they're not Spider-Man and the Vulture. There's just
I agree, it's a very powerful thing, that scene is, especially, I feel like that scene kind of like a writer's dream, as far as like, sure. Oh boy, what, I get to do some weird mm-hmm. stuff here.
Yep.
I mean, I love that scene, especially, I reference this scene many times in this episode, is a scene in Spider-Man 2 when he stopping the speeding train, and he's using his web, you know, that's my web slinging noise. And then his mask comes off, and people see who he is. I was like, when I watched that, I was like, oh my god, best superhero movie ever. Although I didn't have much to compare it to. X-Men 2, probably at that point.
X-Men 2 is still
fantastic. That's a good movie. That's a damn good movie.
It is.
Much darker than I thought it was going to be, but and the third one, right off a cliff.
Right off a cliff, yep.
That's why it's not higher than Wonder Woman, I think, and Batman is... The first two X-Men movies were pretty good, and then it's gone. But
first X-Men movie does not hold up too well. I watched it.
No, but that's the reason why Spider-Man on my list from 2002 is so low, because I don't think that one holds up well
really?
Either.
Really? Okay. So, anyway, we're digressing. Mm.
Yes, that's I love that the scene in the car. If you haven't seen it, it's, you know, they both meet each other, and one of them knows, Parker knows right away, he's in trouble. He's right. In a lot of trouble. And Keaton figures it out about halfway through the car ride. And then it's a very interesting conversation afterwards. But I don't think it's spoiling too much.
No. It's a really good scene. And it's very much worth mentioning if we're talking about the film. Because that, like I said before, when it's revealed, the reveal that we were mentioning earlier, that is when it stops being a good film, and for me started being a great film, was that sequence right there.
That's fair. I can understand that. I did really enjoy that scene. So what do you like best about that? I'd like to talk more about Spider-Man, but I also don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it.
Sure.
It's only been out for a week.
Mm-hmm.
By all means, watch this movie.
Yeah, please do.
The highlights of the movies that came before this, very quickly, what do you think?
Highlights of them are probably the scenes that you remember, especially in the original the Raimi trilogy. Those as I remember them, they were visually really fun to look at. They were a blast, and like you said, there was a lot of darkness in them. There was a lot of really serious conflict in them. And as far as the Garfield films go, I think those were good in their own right. I like Garfield, as we were saying earlier. I like him more than Maguire, because he has this more of a youthful energy, whereas Maguire's, he felt like he was 30 the whole time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. So we've gone back as far as the Spider-Man, the youthfulness, we've gone back and back. I mean, yeah, so Maguire really did feel like he was an old man in a young man's body.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
At least the character. Mm-hmm. So that's I do like that. What else do you like about the reboots, or about the original and the reboot and then this reboot?
I don't know what else I could say. I haven't seen them recently enough to really compare them thoroughly. The most recent one I saw was
Homecoming, of course.
Well, yeah. Besides Homecoming, was Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I think I only saw that when it came out, I want to say.
That came out in 2014.
Right.
So anything you want to say is spoiler-free, go ahead.
Right,
look,
yeah,
you haven't seen it in 3 years, you're not going to see it.
I think I said it probably a dozen times already, but it's another one. I want to destroy the world. No, you can't. Well, obviously, they're not going to let them destroy the world, because then you would have no more Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. I still don't understand, given what we had with Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2, they didn't just continue with that one. I still can't figure that out. Without, delving into it, I just can't.
I don't know. I think they must have wanted a fresh slate, and they wanted a young Peter Parker.
But why not just... I don't understand. Why not just... if you wanted that, then just why didn't you just do that in 2012?
I don't think Sony wanted that. I think they wanted a fresh face, but I don't think they wanted, a young face that fit in with the rest of the Marvel universe. I think they wanted... I'm trying to think of another film series to compare it to, but the only ones that really switch actors this much are the freaking Bond films.
And that was weird, too, because... We'd had Iron Man, we had Thor by that point. Yep. We'd had all the first ones, right? All the first movies of Captain America, which is weird because they knew they were headed towards Avengers, and Sony was approached about, look, we need Spider-Man, before they did the reboot. Mm-hmm. So somewhere along the line, someone made that decision that it was ultimately more along Sony's best interest to not go in that route.
Right.
I mean, they're there now, so...
Right. And I don't know whether it was they wanted to actually be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe so much as it was they knew how much these Marvel films were making, and they wanted a piece of that.
Well, also, some must have said, look, if we get him part of the, if we make Spider-Man, if we integrate him contractually, if we let him do it, we get a piece of the pie every time.
Right. So. Every time they use him, and they're going to.
Oh, 100%.
I would be really surprised if he didn't. Show up in...
Well, they'd be foolish not to, because of the numbers. The box office that all three of the first Spider-Man movie got, it never really tapered up. Well, it did taper up, but $821 million, $757 million, and then this one did $469. That's only 1 week in the box office, so I'm sure it'll get up to $821. people love Spider-Man. That much is very clear by box office.
Absolutely.
They continue to watch it, even though it's rebooted again, you know.
Right.
I want to see more... I want to see at least one more Spider-Man movie separate of the Avengers. I mean, we won't get it because Infinity War is next on their plate.
Mm.
But I'd like to see another Spider-Man movie. Although it's hard to... Because after the Avengers movies... What was the first movie after the Avengers movie in 2012? Thor.
It was Thor Ragnarok. Not Thor
Dark World.
Thor Dark World, yeah.
And everyone's like, where are the rest
Where's
of the...
Everyone else?
Where's everyone
yeah,
else?
That's the struggle that they're going to have once... Now that they have, 10 or 12 different characters that they've made solo standalone films now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They need to keep making excuses, just like normal comic books. It's Thor and Hulk are in space and they're doing other stuff right now, so they couldn't be here right now. Yeah.
Just for comparison's sake, the first movies of each franchise, the budget and how much it made in its run. Thor... $150 million budget, $449 million. Iron Man, $140 million budget, $585 million. Captain America, $140 million budget, $370 million. Now, we'll say that Captain America, I put that as high on my list as I did. I guess I never explained why. Because Captain America is the most functional one to me. I think Winter Soldier is, in many ways, an improvement over the original movie, which is already a darn good movie. I really love Stanley Tucci and the original Captain America. I love the scene when he's talking about be a great man and not just a strong man, but someone knows the power of, I forget how it goes, but a great man knows the power of strength more than a strong man.
Sure.
You know what I mean? He's telling him to be a great man. Mm-hmm. Wonderful scene. Ant-Man, $130 million budget, $519. That made more money than I thought I was going to make.
I think that made more money than anyone was expecting.
Yeah, I'll be honest. The Hulk... This is the Edward Norton version. $150 million, $263 million worldwide. That's his final run, but I guess that's the least popular of all of them. Doctor Strange, there might be another Doctor Strange movie, maybe not, but the first movie did. $165 million budget with $677 million running. So, again, we're into the billions now with how much Marvel's made.
Oh, yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy, $170 million. Capped out at $773 million when his run in the theater was done. So that we're well into $3 or $4 billion by now. Well, we have to be. Yeah.
Given all the films they've made, I'd be surprised if they weren't already around $5 billion or maybe even 10 for their whole franchise.
And we're at less than $2 billion invested for all the budgets. Like way less, like $2.3 billion invested, and we're already at $6 or $7 billion return.
Yeah.
So that is insane to me. Yep. Like, how do you?
I bet they're glad that they made Iron Man 1 and made it. They kicked off this whole franchise.
It was a weird bringing Fury in, and there's no way that gamble was going to fail. I don't think that ever could have backfired in any universe. No, I don't think so. I don't think that could have failed, but I'm very happy that they did, because these movies, although admittedly will get so, when they start weaving them together so intricately, it's going to start being like other franchises that are just like so ridiculously, like so perfectly interwoven. It just can't, you can't do that without it being pretentious or, you know, like when you, for instance, when they, in this, the iPhone movie that Peter Parker is making, just after the movie kind of like starts, he's making it, and then it ends, he's, you know, he's bugging happy, you know, being a kid, being a 15-year-old kid, bugging happy, and then it goes up, the iPhone movie ends with, he's suiting up, and then you look out on the tarmac and you see the Avengers in Civil War getting ready to fight, and he goes out there, steals the shield.
Yep.
I mean, it's kind of like that, where you're like, oh, why didn't we know that before? Like, why do we wait till now to see that?
Right.
You know, that's just one of those things. Like, it's so perfectly interwoven. It kind of takes the believability. These are superheroes anyway. So the believability factor is so low to begin with. But I thought Spider-Man Homecoming was a damn good movie.
It was.
I didn't think it was the greatest movie, nor did I think it was the greatest Spider-Man movie, but a very solid movie that I think everyone was worried wasn't going to be solid. Interesting if it wasn't good.
I definitely was worried for a while about, I think it was just the title of it more than anything. It was just Spider-Man Homecoming. They didn't want to just call it Spider-Man or something like that. They wanted to make it sound like a sequel, I think.
And with this one, of course, the other Spider-Mans now don't exist in at all.
No, those are, you know, Earth 67 or 89-B. Those are separate continuities entirely.
And there's a lot in this movie that completely undo the original, as far as, like, really kind of make fun of their movies, where, like, he goes to web-sling across a golf course and realizes he doesn't hit anything.
Right, yeah.
So the next shot is him literally running from one side, this huge wide shot of him running from one side of the golf course to the other side, and you hear him panting as he's running, like, he's just like...
He doesn't have these huge city buildings of Manhattan to swing around anymore.
I thought, like, a poking fun at the other ones. He always had something to, you know,
right, yeah.
Always had something to attach to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure the Obi-Wan Kenobi moment was as effective as it could have been had the Obi-Wan Kenobi part not happened. We didn't.
Sure.
So that's, when you see it, that's not really a spoiler, but when you see it, you'll understand. I think it'd have been more powerful if you don't, the reference to Obi-Wan Kenobi, if you don't get that, then. But I really was in love with this movie. I really enjoyed it from the time it started to the time it ended. And there is a post-credit scene in this one. There's two.
Mm-hmm.
The last one's a funny one, but the one, you know, 15 seconds after the credits start, definitely should stay and watch that. That's 100%.
Just as someone that works in the industry, sitting way through the credits every single time. I've done it since I was a little kid, and I wait through the credits to every.
Well, I do now because, like, I see, like, tons of names that I personally have met and worked with. Like, I can't watch a movie now without seeing half a dozen people I personally have met.
Sure. So, but more than anything, it's just sit, listen to the score, look at the names, make fun of some of them if you want. And more than that, you're just missing the whole rush to get out of the theater. And, like, with all of these Marvel films, they've all had post-credit scenes.
Yeah, so, everyone knows to sit through them now.
Right, yeah, yeah. But some people were still walking out in the theater. I'm like, dude, come on, you know there's something, there's more coming. You got to know that, right?
But, I mean, like, everyone, like, the Pirates of the Caribbean all had a post-credit scene. I mean, there's lots of franchises that do that now. I mean, I don't know what started it.
I think it might have been Pirates of the Caribbean, actually.
You think it was, what was after the first one?
The first one was when the Ghost Monkey
So you know him and Barbossa were still alive, right, not dead.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the second one. The dog was in the throne, wasn't it? There was a dog sitting in the throne of the people on that island.
Yeah.
And the third one, of course. Oh, was the scene where he was waiting? Young Will's waiting for his father. Then you see the flash of green, and you see Will sail up, and like, I love the romantic stuff. So this week's Clark Hayes is a little bit of a departure from the normal three reasons. But I wanted to put on this list as far as referencing superhero movies, movies that aren't really what you call them Marvel Cinematic Superheroes. Three movies I think you should watch that you can appreciate because of the Marvel Universe. You appreciate a little bit more of, I mean, as far as these movies are concerned, a superhero is, by the beginning, or by the end, realizes what they could be, the symbol they are. They realize that the needs of the collective are way more important than the needs of the individual. And that's kind of like one of the criteria for becoming a superhero is you become so much more when you, from where you started, is kick-ass. I love kick-ass.
I love kick-ass, too.
I mean, that's kind of a superhero story, but it's grounded. It's completely grounded.
It's grounded in a lot of ways, but at the end of the film, it gets so freaking ridiculous.
And he blows the guy with the bazooka. And
I love that film.
And okay, 10-year spoiler, sorry.
Yeah, that film was released before Lost ended, so I mean, it's you should have seen it by now.
One of those scenes that really works in Kick-Ass is when he's fighting those guys outside the convenience store, and everyone's on their phone, like, recording it, getting the whole YouTube aspect into it, and someone calls him an asshole, and he looks up and says, three dudes, kick the crap out of one, you guys stand around and watch, and I'm the freak?
Right,
like, yeah. I mean, that's kind of, it. Like, look, I'm getting my hair standing up, I'm getting goosebumps.
It's great scene.
So that's interesting. So Kick-Ass is one of them, and Kick-Ass 2 has some great moments too. Not as many as the first one, but Kick-Ass 2 is a very functional movie. I mean, it's not a great movie by any means, but he sees the need for a superhero and becomes that superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. RoboCop, I mentioned before on this list. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't put on the superhero list, but I kind of do. Starts as a man and then as a robot man.
Oh, spoiler alert, man. Come on.
Okay, it's been rebooted once. It's been five movies. I'm sorry. If you don't know who RoboCop is, then I mean, you need to watch a RoboCop movie. The first one is actually in the Criterion Collection.
Yep.
We actually put it on the Criterion list on this one. That's a very, as far as what a superhero is, that work in a superhero movie.
Sure.
And I think this movie is already on the Clark Hayes list. Unbreakable. Is the M. Night Shyamalan. Movie that we're going to see a revisit to because of the success of Split, where you have a hero versus a villain, plain and simple. Bruce Willis is the hero, Sam Jackson is the villain, Dr. Glass, and it's pure good against evil. I mean, they're not superheroes and supervillains by how most people would define them because of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but they are in the movie, and it's, again, very grounded.
Mm.
I like all these movies. Besides RoboCop, I mean, I guess it is grounded in its own way. But
yeah,
those are some movies you should watch. If you really enjoy the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which everyone seems to, and box office certainly speaks, you speak with your wallet, then watch these movies. They're wonderful. Mm. I can't. You will like them. If you like superhero movies, you'll like them. So Kendall, thank you for joining me today.
Of course, you're welcome.
I see you have you're wearing your Khaleesi shirt.
I am.
In preparation for Game of Thrones.
Thrones coming back tonight. Super excited.
All right. Well, I love your shirt. That's you got some spirit, buddy. I like that. Kendall Sullivan, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
You may see him on future episodes. I do hope Kendall brings some good insight.
I will come back for Dark Tower, if nothing else. To be back for that.
All right. Thanks for listening to the episode, and enjoy. Excuse me. You can find me at Grayson Maxwell 1. You can find the podcast For the Love of Cinema at Love Cinema Pod.
I completely forgot to look up my own Twitter handle, so it's Kendall Sullivan. I'm on Twitter. I think it's just Kendall Sullivan because I couldn't fit the N in there. But yeah, I'm on Twitter if you'd like to follow me.
Well, check him out. See his late night tweets about McDonald's food at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
I'm sure
as I am wont to do. Yep, that's what I do.
I am wont. Well, thank you very much for listening. Have a good evening.